ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Nigamakalpataror galitam phalam sukamukhad amrita dravya samyutam pipata bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvibhavuka. O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Sukadev Goswami, therefore this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarine juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Purport. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are narrated, and the narration is systematically depicted by Srila Sukadev Goswami. Thus, the subject matter is appealing to all classes of persons, including those who seek liberation and those who seek to become one with the Supreme Whole. So this is the third of the introduction here. Then, here now is described who this work is for and what you can gain from it. So then, here we see that what is depicted is that this is actually for those who are expert and thoughtful, those who are the hamsas. It's actually for them. But it's also so nice that even those who are interested in liberation, they can take advantage of it. So in other words, those who are performing their particular activities, either their religious activities to liberate themselves from the material entanglement, or those who are beyond material entanglement, all of them will find what they're looking for in Srimad Bhagavatam. Now here, expert and thoughtful. Expert then would mean that it is in line with the Vedic literatures, that they are performing those activities by practice. They have practiced these things, so therefore they become expert. Expert also would mean that they are connected to the Supreme Lord. Because if it's not connected to the Supreme Lord, it can never be expert. It will always be speculative. This one will always find. Someone in the material world may be very, very knowledgeable, but still there is speculation. They may get many things right, but they will also have other things wrong, right? Because of their purview on life. They will have their own means. If you want to have an opinion, you have to have something to compare things with. You want to be observant. Like if you say, oh, we are, objective. Right? We're not subjective. But to be objective, that itself is a value. That's already a subjective value. That I value objectiveness. Right? And so, what does objectiveness look like? How would you describe it? So you'll see, each individual will have their own particular angle on it, depending on their particular values. So then, we see that it becomes, there must be a value system, otherwise how there'll be communication. Right? You can communicate to somebody and you feel this person is speaking and you can understand it because there's common values. If there's not common values, then it won't mean anything to you. Right? You can speak all kinds of things and who cares. But if it's common values, then it will have some meaning to you. So here then, because their value system then is based on this Vedic literatures, because their value system is based on the previous acharyas, therefore then they become expert. Right? They actually know what they're doing. It's not speculative. It's not speculative. And thoughtful. Spiritual life actually begins when you become thoughtful. Right? This is the point being made in the Shruti Shastra, is that spiritual life begins when you become introspective, right? You question. We want to know why. Why is it going on like this? Well, not just, why is it that the market rate went up and yesterday it was down? No, it has to be beyond that. It has to be, who am I? Where am I going? So that means there must be introspective, because if you want to know who you are, it means you have to be willing to look at who you are. So many times this also becomes a problem in spiritual life, because the devotee is afraid of looking at who he is. They're worried about that, because it may be painful, because no one wants to be wrong, no one wants to be the fool. But it's kind of a foregone conclusion that there must be some foolishness just having come here to the material world. If we were so together, so organized, so perfect, we wouldn't be here, right? You know, unless, of course, you're that special great soul who has come down from the spiritual world to benedict us and all that, then that's another thing. But, you know, we won't ask, you know, all those present to raise their hands, so we'll leave it up the mystery of those to be able to understand and figure out. But otherwise, then it's just a matter of being thoughtful. So one who is expert, he performs his duties based on the shastras, and he is thoughtful. He is able to see, is it applying in my life? Am I doing it myself? You know, am I actually getting the results? Then this book is for them. This is the right book, right? If you don't want to look into yourself, you don't want to know, then this is, may not be the right book, because we see everybody here is able to look at themselves quite plainly, you know, without any kind of covering. They're able to look very straight. And if they're not, then that is pointed out. It's seen. Those who are not introspective, what results they're getting. So then that presents the Bhagavatam as the ripened fruit. It means whatever is there in the Vedic literatures, this is the conclusion. So this is what you'll get. This is who it's for. Right? And therefore, it becomes more tasteful. So tasting of rasa, tasting of the Lord's pastimes, tasting of what is the actual essence in life in the Vedic literatures, that you will gain from Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is then completes the what's called Anubandha Chatushtaya, means explanation of what the literature is, who it's for, how what will be the result of studying it. So this then becomes the explanation of that. So then in this paragraph, in paragraph 9, then it's mentioned that the narration is systematic. Generally, some will say it's not systematic, because it's going here and there and everything like that. But we have to remember that is what a human being is. Right? Human being has their particular individual angle on things, their own mentality, their different aspects of their life. And so then a question is asked. You have to answer that question. But in doing so, if there is any foundational topics to be understood, those must be first presented. If there is any doubts or misgivings that are there in the person, those must be addressed. And to do this, then there must be examples given. There must be support of other stories or points. Therefore, the thread of explaining to Parikit Maharaj what is the essence of all the Vedic literatures, what is the duty of somebody at the time of death, right? That is what's there. Then it becomes explained. In doing this, then you have to establish things. You have to establish who is the Lord. In establishing who is the Lord, then you must know the creation. You must know the Lord's expansions. All these different aspects have to be known. So those are there, right? Because you're trying to establish that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? That must be established before his pastimes can be revealed. Because if you don't accept that, then you'll think all kinds of funny things about him. Right? Why is he off with others' wives in the dead of night? Why is he, you know, doing all these funny things? So that all has to be established. Now, in establishing that, then naturally we end up with side points will be there, how the creation works, how all these different things happen, all that. So that will all come up in the narration on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's systematic. He's going through establishing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, establishing how Krishna manifests in the world through all his incarnations, how the world is working. Then what's the essence of all this philosophy and everything else? How things are functioning. So then we see that it's quite systematic. So then because it's systematic, it's appealing to all. It says even including those who seek liberation or those who want to become one with everyone. So they are interested in jnana. So when things are systematic, they are also attracted. So those who are interested in the Lord's pastimes, name, form, qualities, pastimes, they will be interested because it's about Krishna. And even those who don't care for that because they're interested in liberation, they will find it nice because it's systematic. Like that. Therefore, it appeals to all classes. Then, paragraph 10. In Sanskrit, the parrot is also known as Shuka. When a ripened fruit is cut by the red beaks of such birds, its sweet flavor is enhanced. The Vedic fruit, which is mature and ripe in knowledge, is spoken through the lips of Sukadeva Goswami, who is compared to the parrot, not for his ability to recite the Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from his learned father, but for his ability to present the work in a manner that would appeal to all classes of men. So this principle also is an important point, is that by further and further discussions, then the topic becomes more and more sweet, because then you're dealing with the understandings and realizations of those people involved. That is an important thing. Because sometimes it is thought, oh, we'll just go directly to the source. That will be better. We will hear without all the different, discussions without the parampara. We will just go straight to the source. But then one reduces actually one's appreciation of the subject matter, because others in their tasting of the subject matter then add what it is their experience. Then by hearing their experience, then we can deepen our experience. Otherwise, then you have to start from scratch. But here it's pointed out that by that process of parampara, then their experiences, their understandings are added. So then it gives greater and greater scope for appreciation. So since the work's purpose is appreciation or taste of the Lord's pastimes, therefore hearing it through the parampara becomes an integral part of that process. Because if you want to increase taste, then you hear it through others who are coming in that line. Then it adds to that taste. So here is that meaning that repeating is nice, but repeating without understanding or realization is not so tasty. So he's meaning here, in spoken by the parrot, meaning that from the angle of that by biting the fruit, it becomes more sweet. The ripened fruit, it becomes more sweet. That aspect of the parrot, not just that they can repeat it word for word. Sometimes it's thought, someone with a good memory, they remember everything, they will give the best presentation, but not necessarily, because unless it is touched by that understanding of the individual, it doesn't become tasty, right? It's just like if you don't know somebody, you will talk what? Facts and figures. Oh, how are you? Fine. Okay, that's a fact. Okay, that's the, you know, when did you come? Oh, last night. Oh, okay. Where do you stay? Okay, we're staying in this guest house. Oh, is everything okay? You know, yes. Okay, no. Like this. But it's just facts. It's just repeating. Right? But if you know the person more, then they'll talk about what they're doing, how they felt about things, how's their view on things. You'll get that personal aspect, their experience. So for this scripture, then we need to go deeper. So therefore, then the experience of these personalities becomes more important than simply just the recitation. So paragraph 10. The subject matter is so presented through the lips of Srila Sukadeva Goswami that any sincere listener that hears submissively can at once relish transcendental tastes, which are distinct from the perverted tastes of the material world. The ripened fruit is not dropped all of a sudden from the highest planet of Krishna Loka. Rather, it has come down carefully through the chain of disciplic succession, without change or disturbance. Foolish people who are not in the transcendental disciplic succession commit great blunders by trying to understand the highest transcendental rasa, known as the rasa dance, without following in the footsteps of Sukadeva Goswami, who presents this fruit very carefully by stages of transcendental realization. One should be intelligent enough to know the position of Srimad Bhagavatam by considering personalities like Sukadeva Goswami, who deals with the subject so carefully. This process of disciplic succession of the Bhagavat school suggests that in the future also Srimad Bhagavatam has to be understood from a person who is factually a representative of Srila Sukadeva Goswami. A professional man who makes a business out of reciting the Bhagavatam illegally is certainly not a representative of Sukadeva Goswami. Such a man's business is only to earn his livelihood. Therefore, one should refrain from hearing the lectures of such professional men. Such men usually go to the most confidential part of the literature without undergoing the gradual process of understanding this grave subject. They usually plunge into the subject matter of the rasa dance, which is misunderstood by the foolish class of men. Some of them take this to be immoral, while others try to cover it up by their own stupid interpretations. They have no desire to follow in the footsteps of Srila Sukadeva Goswami. So then, in hearing this, that person must come in the parampara, because something so delicate, if it's dropped from the top platform, you catch it, it will make a mess, right? Like that, all good intentions, it will make a mess. It has to be delicately handed down, because it's something very delicate. As the more you go higher, the more delicate it is, the more subtle it is. So because of that subtleness, then there must be that care in deliverance. So here is the point, is Sukadeva Goswami is careful how it's presented. So many people can just dive right in, say this, say that, but unless it's carefully done, then the audience will not be able to appreciate. They won't be able to understand what's going on. We see in Krishna book, then anybody can read it. You can read it to the children when they go to bed. You can read it yourself. You can give it to the non-devotees. Everybody can read it, and everybody is happy with it. But in there are described some of the most confidential subject matters. Like that. Very detailed. Many times because the mood is there, we catch the mood. We many times forget the detail, because that's the most important thing, is catching that. What is that mood, that flavor of the service of the devotees of Krishna? But the details are just as much as in other shastras that are known for it being detailed. But that's not noticed. Because of the carefulness in which the members of the parampara have handed it down, then anybody can read it, and it's not a problem. So this is the importance, because otherwise if it's handed down wrongly, then it will be, it will make a mess, it will create a problem. So Srila Prabhupada is pointing out is that the Bhagavat school therefore is very careful in discussing these subject matters. Not the subject matters aren't discussed, but they're carefully discussed. If someone's not careful, then that's to be avoided. Right? Better no discussion than an uncareful discussion. Like that. So one has to follow in the footsteps. That's the point. He makes the matter is that sincere listener who's submissive means they want to know and they're submissive. Right? That's all. If you're expert at study, means you know how to be interested, right? You know how to be submissive. Then you have that point. So here, so sincere and submission, sincerity and submission, then is important. If that's there, then this will be understood. If it's not there, then it won't be. Then. Paragraph 12. One should conclude, therefore, that the serious student of the rasa should receive the message of Bhagavatam in the chain of disciplic succession from Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who describes the Bhagavatam from its very beginning and not whimsically to satisfy the mundaner who has very little knowledge in transcendental science. Srimad Bhagavatam is so carefully presented that a sincere and serious person can at once enjoy the ripened fruit of Vedic knowledge. simply by drinking the nectarian juice through the mouth of Sukadev Goswami or his bona fide representative. So then presentation is not to please the listener, but to enlighten the listener. This is an important point, is that a modern concept is you want to please the other person. No, it's not a matter of pleasing, it's a matter of addressing them where they are. So you have to speak so that they will understand it. Then if they understand it, they will be pleased. Right? Means one wants to be happy, but if one directly tries to be happy, no one's become happy. But if you make Krishna happy, then we become happy. So in the same way as if you make them understand, they will be pleased. Right? Not that if you try to please them, you will ever be able to please anyone. It doesn't happen. Right? When you're speaking with vox populi, everybody has their own opinion. What is that opinion based on? Right? What is the foundation of each individual's opinion? If it's not the scripture, then you can't find any commonality. Right? The scripture is that common base in which every individual can find a commonality with another individual. Because there's a common platform or common standard in which to judge everything. Right? But if people just work on their own opinion that's not based on the scripture, then you can have unlimited opinions. So there's no question of bringing anyone together. So then how will you even get two people to be able to discuss anything and be happy? Because they will have their own idea. So there has to be a common thread. So that common thread is Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, is Shabda. By hearing from the authorities, then that creates the common point which you can bring everyone back to. Then it can be understood. So then Sukadev Goswami, then in presenting this, then this is for those who accept the Vedic literatures. But they want to know the essence. Because Vedic literatures are very vast. Like that. That means there's so many subjects. So that's like an ocean. Then you take every subject, it itself is like an ocean. Even you take a subsection of a subject in the Vedic literatures, it's an ocean. So it's just you can't cross it. But those who are intelligent want to know, what is this essence? What is it we're looking for in this? Because if you know that, then however much you touch from it, you will gain. Right? Means however much you can enter into the subject matter, you will gain from it because you know the essence. So detail attached to essence gives result. Detail without essence doesn't give a great result, because one person will start here in the ocean, someone else will start there in the ocean. So because the principle is not in place, therefore the two will seem completely different. So then where's the interaction, where's the commonality? Right? So if the principle is there, then they have a common point, even though one likes this particular detail, one likes that detail. So one may wonder, why so much talk on the commonality? Because that is rasa. If there's not a common point, there is no rasa. Neither sensual, neither emotional, or neither spiritual. Right? It doesn't happen. If there's not a common point, you can't get, you take a piece of wood, put it on your tongue, nothing much happens, right? Now you take that piece of wood and put it on, a wood borer's tongue, it's great, because there's a commonality. But for us, nothing special, right? So there has to be something common, otherwise there's no taste. So Bhagavatam, its essence, is taste. So it must be a common principle. That you want to know, one is sincere, one wants to know Krishna, one is willing to hear from the authorities, and one therefore accepts the authorities' statement that this is the topmost literature. Then that commonality will give some taste, will give some rasa. So So whimsically trying to satisfy people's desires hasn't worked in the past, doesn't work today, won't work tomorrow. Therefore, by training them, by enlightening them, but in a way that they can understand, means, in other words, addressing their individual need, but enlightened, then they will become happy. Otherwise, not. Any questions on this? Comments? Yes.
Do you remember any Puranic story where this point is shown?
Any Puranic story where this is shown?
The presentation of Lady Pratichara, just for the pleasing masses.
Well, Prabhupada means, the question is there any Puranic story on the pleasing of others rather than getting to the truth? Prabhupada here gives the professional reciters as an example. The professional reciters, they're doing it for money. They're doing it for prestige. They want to be, means they have an inclination towards being religious. So if you speak on a religious subject matter, then generally people will put it together and consider that you're religious. And at the same time, is they have to maintain themselves, so therefore by doing this, then they get whatever they require. But because that's their purpose, is just to please others, to get money, and in doing so they want to be known as religious, so the whole basis of their approach is economics. It's not actually education. Right? That's why in the Vedic literature it's made such a strict thing that the Brahmins perform their service, not for payment. And then one then gives them something in return for that. Means that they've done something for you, so you exchange, you return that. So that is relationship, that's not business. So it's a very important thing. So those who make business out of education, then it becomes very difficult. Because then what it is, that business means you have to please the people. So what they want is what you teach, rather than what should be taught is what you teach. It's two different approaches. So that's the difference here, is that those who do just for themselves. Now you'll find in the Vedic literatures, generally you don't have the Bhagavatam reciters and all that, because Bhagavatam is not so much prominent in anyone's mind other than the devotees. And of the devotees, then specifically the followers of Lord Chaitanya is the prominent literature. Because even for the other Vaishnava Sampradayas, Bhagavatam isn't necessarily the main literature. Like Vishnu Purana, Vishnu Dharmotra, I think those are more prominent amongst the Shris and Madhvas. Nimbarka, I'm not sure. Bhagavatam may be prominent for them also. So, you wouldn't have so much people reciting Bhagavatam before, but you would have people reciting knowledge for their own purposes, that you would get. Like the logicians, the grammarians, like that, they would be speaking things for their own purpose. Because they, by winning in the debate, then their prestige is enhanced. So that's there. So that kind of principle. But this specific, where people do Bhagavad Saptas and this and that, that seems to be more of a more recent thing. After Lord Chaitanya, then these are coming up. But otherwise, not so much. But you'd have the yatris, they would do dramas, they would go from village to village. So they would be doing it for money, to please the people. So if they're very strict, they would stay very careful to the points. If not, then they'll emphasize things that are not so important, because they know that gets something from the crowd. So that tendency is there, is what will get a reaction from the crowd. Now, Now, that in itself is not necessarily bad, because if you're addressing an audience, that audience should be able to relate to what you're presenting. If they don't relate, it doesn't have any meaning to their life, so it won't have any effect. So if your purpose is to relate to their lives so that they take up Krishna consciousness, further their Krishna consciousness, then that's proper. But if it's that you'll do something that they will relate to, therefore they will be pleased with you, therefore they're going to give you money, or at least some prestige or a place to stay for the night or some food, then that's not so good. That's not ideal. That's why in the Vedic tradition, drama had to be headed by the Brahmin director. You know, and on the village level, you get together a few people and they travel, wandering minstrels and stuff like that. They wouldn't bother so much. But, you know, people would be educated so they would know what's proper and not. So they couldn't do anything that was improper. But if the people aren't educated, then they can do anything they like. You know, they can overemphasize things, change things like that to make it more spectacular. You know, that's a common, you know, it's a common thing. You have somebody who's written a book, and somebody decides to do a movie on it, and those who have read the, you know, those who see the movie say, a great movie. Those who read the book say, it had nothing to do with the book. You know? Because they have to make it sell. They have to make it sell. That's the thing. The producer has to make money. He's not doing that out of his love for the common man, that he should have somehow or other be relieved from his anxiety of the material burden of day-to-day life by, you know, 2 hours of entertainment. He's doing it for the money. Right? So, therefore, it must sell. Therefore, the theme must be something that the people are going to buy. You know? Does that make some sense? So, like that, you always see is you can see what are the interests or values of the people by what they do to keep themselves busy. Like that. Is that okay? Something else? Yes.
I was wondering if you could comment a little bit more about Bhagavad Sapta. This seems to be a growing trend in our movement to do Bhagavad Saptas a lot now.
Huh, yeah. The Bhagavad Sapta. I don't think Prabhupada had any problem with the devotees doing it, but he didn't like it being done in a week. You know, do it in 6 days, do it in 8 days. Don't do it in seven, was kind of his thing, because then it becomes thrown in with the other Bhagavat Sapta. Is that if it's a medium through which then those who are used to going to such kind of seminars will come and hear from a bona fide speaker proper presentation of Krishna consciousness, then there's no problem. But we shouldn't be bringing in outside men because it's a big card draw. So what? I mean, we could bring in, you know, naked dancers. I'm sure that we'd get, I'm sure there'd be more people here than Ross Purnima if we put it out that there's going to be, you know, at Sai Math there's going to have a big show, you know, like that. So that's not the point. Then we can say, yeah, but we'll have, you know, playing very pleasantly in the background Prabhupada's kirtan, you know, so they'll all get benefit. You know, it doesn't work like that, because then the problem is Prabhupada mentions, is that even though it's nectar, there's poison in it. So you give someone a glass of milk, but if it has poison in it, they're going to get the effect of the poison, not the milk. So that has to be avoided, because sometimes I know in the past that was popular, calling professional people like that, and them do something. So that's another thing. It means if you bring in professional people, that they will, you know, do something. They want to sing for the deity or something. That's another thing. You know, is they're doing all always for money, but they want to come and sing for the deity for no money. Then there's the service they get, and if others come and listen, then fine. But one should be a little careful about that aspect of bringing them in, because it's a big card draw. You could do anything. Why them? I mean, I'm sure if you brought the Shankaracharya, you'd get more people to come than anyone else, than a Bhagavad Sapta. You know? So, these big orators, they pull in huge amounts of people like that, because what they speak sounds so nice. Like that. content may or may not be great, but how they say it. That's why he said they're professional orators, because they know how to present something so pleasantly to the ear that it sounds good. But the content is not there. So what's so wonderful about Sukadev Goswami is he knows how to present it nice to the ear, and at the same time it has the content. So that's what makes him so special. Because some may have great ability to present but no content, or they may have content but not be so expert at presenting it. You know, they may miss the audience. They'll speak too high or too low or too something for the audience. But Sukadev Goswami is so expert that in his speaking you get the essence, plus it appeals to all audiences. That's what's so wonderful about his narration. Is that okay?
Yeah. All right, so it brings up a point, you know, that like devotees involved in education, they are trained to sincerely present the proper content. Mm. And, you know, maybe someone's new to the teaching arena and he wants to increase his expertise in presentation. We may not be Sukadev Goswamis that are born with that capability. Uh-huh. So in modern pedagogy, there's a system of feedback, you know, that the teachers ask for feedback from the students to see how they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it seems that that might be a little out of sync with Vedic pedagogy. Mm-hmm. But is there some counterpart within Vedic pedagogy that would allow that type of feedback? Maybe just the personal relationships are so close. Mm-hmm.
These personal relationships are close, but more important, it's the method, is question and answer. Mm. Because by the question, you can understand what they understood. Mm. Or by asking them a question, you can understand what they've understood.
So that's the focus of Vedic.
Yeah, Vedic is question and answer, because the point is there. So the feedback is fine, but the point is that why the feedback is being done. So that is the interesting thing to see, is that if the feedback is to find out if they understood the subject matter, you know, and if they understood it means the presentation was something they could grasp. So that's all right. Same time as then there is Vedic, this Vedic pedagogy of you start from the essence and work out. So if the essence is understood, means it's like, okay, here, what you want to gain from the Srimad Bhagavatam, what it is, what you can gain is said in these first three verses. Then from there, then you expand. Right? So that goes. So then in this, you want to get to the 10 topics. To get to the 10 topics, then there's 6 other questions that are asked. Right? It means, what is this Bhagavatam? How did it come about? This and that. You have to set the scene. Right? It means a topic has to have a scene in which it is presented. Right? It means a good, generally the one will take a good narrator or a good writer is able to set the scene and draw the listener into that. Then in that context they are able to present, you know, involve you in the subject matter. Because if that's not there, it's not complete, because whatever's happening happens somewhere, in some place, or some situation, you know, some mood. There's some existence, and then there's some reason that is happening. Right? Something is there, why that situation is there. And what is the need for that topic matter being presented? So then he sets the scene. So basically the first whole canto sets the scene, sets what it is you're looking for, what's the angle of vision of approaching the Bhagavatam. That whole foundation of understanding the Bhagavatam is then given in this. And in a very clever way, through the sages, and then they ask about that, and then it goes to Vyasadeva himself, the author, you know, then how he had presented everything so nicely. It means all the main facts and figures of the Vedic literatures are all in the Mahabharata. And the Vedic literatures are very technical. So to create a literature in which anybody will be happy to read it, right? You give a Mahabharata to anybody who can read, and they'll read it cover to cover, right? And in there is all the technical points of all the Vedic literatures. So that's expert. But in doing that, then he missed the real essential point. Though it's hidden there, it's mentioned. Now and again he even brings it up. But because of the proportion of other facts and figures and the mood that makes it interesting, right? Then it's not so attractive. So it means it is attractive, but you don't get the essence. Well, the Bhagavatam, it's giving the essence, but it may not be so attractive on the mundane platform. So Bhagavatam, you don't just pick it up and just read it cover to cover. You know, you contemplate it, you think about it, you question, you try to enter into it. Mahabharata, you could just skim right past it and not even... You'd slowly, by hearing it many, many times, you gain so many of the knowledge and activities that you should perform. You know that, okay, Arjuna did this, and Yudhishthira did that, and Draupadi did this, and Gandhari did that. So that's what we should do, after a repeated hearing. But the Bhagavatam just gets down to the essence immediately. So immediately then it goes in and then says that this is what is the Bhagavatam, this is what the game. Then that expands out. So technically the Bhagavatam that Sukadeva Goswami spoke starts from the second canto. But to appreciate what Sukadeva spoke, then we have a further application of being touched by the lips of a parrot. So then Vyasadeva and the sages of Naimisharanya, then Suta Goswami, then they speak, and then it brings even more sweetness. So then you're able to even relish better. Because otherwise, then from the second canto to basically, I think it's into the beginning of the 12th canto, that is the Bhagavatam that Sukadeva spoke. But what Suta Goswami spoke then has the first canto and the balance of the 12th canto. So you see, it means he's taking that and expanding it more. So it becomes nice. So that principle of starting with the essence, that you know what it is you're supposed to learn. The Vedic literatures have a slightly different angle on getting you to think. Means the modern ideas get you to think, create an interest to know, make you question, but don't give you the conclusion. You have to look for it. I'm going to speak all these different things, and it's not necessarily all going to be held together, but you're supposed to then apply yourself and figure out that, okay, in today's lecture this point was there, tomorrow's is that, and the next day's is that, and then you're supposed to put it together that this means this conclusion. So this way they kind of encourage you to think or create that that interest. But the Vedic is different because the modern is that the field is speculative. Everybody has their own opinion. You come up with your own conclusion, and that makes you a individual in your own right, and that makes you something special and something who's going to do something and is going to go out there and, you know, change the world. So it's very nice, but the point is all those people who change the world have to work with others. And once they've changed it, if they don't want the next guy to change it again, there has to be some common platform that there has been some common benefit. So that means there must be a common standard through which to become an individual. So this then, the Vedic can solve this problem of a well-organized society where people don't think, they're just cogs in the machine, and the rugged individual who does his own thing but can't function with anybody else, right? You know, you don't hear a Daniel Boone, you know, being a great social, you know, like that. You know, it's like, you probably would get a few, you know, it's just all these people who, you know, make up, but then the whole point is, but everybody wants to maintain what's been gained, right? You know, okay, Johnny Appleseed goes and plants all the trees, and then the next guy, you know, whatever it is, you know, somebody, lumberjack, comes along and cuts them all down and sells them and makes a great profit. So to prevent the next guy from cutting them all down so that the next generations can appreciate the apples, then there has to be some common principle that, yes, okay, these apple trees are good. Leave them there. Like that. So this becomes the dilemma at which the modern approach, the modern intellectuals, the modern politicians, they can't answer. Because they see that you have to structure it, but in structuring it, it has its downside. But giving people free will also has its downside. It's whatever you're trying to do, then the intellectuals undermine. So you have to somehow or another make the intellectuals that they can't have any effect on the system. But then the people aren't educated. And by not being educated, they don't have a value system, so they do anything. So you want it structured, how it will be structured if they don't have a value system. But to teach the value system, then you must educate them, right? So the intellectuals must deal with them. But because there is no common standard, the intellectuals each have their own idea. And that may be different from the state who's trying to organize them. So it becomes a big problem for them. So the Vedic thing is no, here are the principles on which the actual cosmic creation works. It's already there. It's not a matter of whether we acknowledge them or not, they function. It's not like the Buddhist conception that, you know, if someone's there to hear in the forest when the tree falls, then it makes a sound. If no one's there, they don't do anything, you know? Like once I saw one cartoon where there's a bunch of cows standing up on their back legs walking around. And one of the cows is looking over the fence, you know, and onto the road and goes, "Hey, everybody down on all fours, there's a car coming." You know, so it doesn't work like that. You know, so it is what it is, right? Isn't that what God says? I is who I is, right? That's what he says. So that's the whole point, is that it's already the way it is. Now it's a matter of acknowledging that and then thinking that way. Because one may say, no, I want to think how I want to think. But no, you won't think the way you think. Who can just think on their own? Right? No, they will then connect themselves to a group that they like how they think and think like that. Guaranteed. Very rare you find an individual who just thinks however he thinks. But still, even that individual is a collection of their experiences in life. And then they try to put that all together in something that's consistent. And because they're able to make that consistency out of it, other people then follow. Right? Like that. Like you have the guy who writes the book and says, you know, you should be an individual, so you shouldn't accept authority. You just work it out yourself. But if that is really valuable to the man, why did he publish a book in which others will read that and then follow him as an authority? You know? So therefore, the philosophy actually is to make money, not to actually. So the common principles, what it is you're looking for, should be known clearly. Because jnana is not our goal. Modern education, jnana is a goal. But in Vedic education, it's vigyan. So vigyan comes from working with jnana and applying it. Then you get vigyan. Well, the modern is just getting to jnana. That's good enough. And practical is something else. So intellectualizing on something, having a vision, having this, and practical day-to-day life are separated in the modern concept. Like that. Some individuals are able to bring that together and they're considered very special. But generally it's you have your intellectuals saying whatever they're doing and the business people are just going along and making money and laughing. So it's not brought together. It's not important. Like that. It means how the modern world functions is not based on any special intellectual idea. It's simply based on how to make the machine work so that the economics is there and people are satisfied. Right? That's all it's trying to do. So if someone comes up with a theory how to do that, nice. You have so many of them, they've come up with it, you know. How to make this machine. How to bring everyone in line. So it's there, it's common. It's popular. Then you'll see, you know, Marx sits there, dreams it up, and then Lenin does something with it. Right? he uses it for political reasons. The other is bringing it up with some idea of some other, you know, utopian. But they use it to create. It has to become practical. So the Vedic literature, then, that's not enough. You have to realize, because you have to go back to Godhead. So then you're given the frameworks, you're given the philosophy, you're given the culture, you're given that this is how it works, this is the framework with which to think. And this is the thinking. Why is that special? Why would you agree to that? Because this is the thinking of those who are liberated. This is the thinking of those who are from the spiritual world. They think like this. So that's what's about. So then, okay, then in this is what we're looking for. Then it's a matter of then applying that principle to that detail, understanding it, because that also, you have to bridge that gap. And then the next bridge is to gap from that detail into your life. So there's plenty to think about, and the thinking is very practical. But that is still based on a theory, you know, a tattva, a branch of knowledge, you know, or a method. Right, that's what we mentioned. Mimamsa means the method of interpretation. So Uttara Mimamsa means that interpreting the Vedic literatures that takes you up out of the material world. Right, and then for us, then Uttara Mimamsa meaning that you get into the spiritual world. Right, Shankara means Uttara Mimamsa. You simply get out of the material world, but we take it a step further. We get into the spiritual world. Therefore, that is our method of interpretation. Army Mamsa. So for us, this Dasamul, or this Sambandhavideya Prayojana, right, this that Krishna Bhakti, chanting the holy name, Sankirtan, you know, we're servants of Krishna. These are how we'll interpret. So when something says, is spoken in a way that would be appealing to an impersonalist, we interpret it as a personalist. If it's spoken in such a way that would be appealing to a karmakandi, we still interpret it as a devotee. While the karmakandi will interpret the jnana and bhakti as karma. And the jnani will interpret those things that are directed towards devotees and the karmis as jnana. Because that is the meaning of mimamsa, is how you're going to interpret. So there's a consistency in your thought and in your activities.
The karma mimamsa philosophy in the Govardhana.
Yeah, yeah. Karma means that they have a thing where everything in your life can be brought into that philosophy. So it's complete. They try to. But, of course, it doesn't answer everything because it doesn't address actually the need of the soul. Right? It means Shankara addresses the soul, but not the need of the soul. Right? He addresses that the material world can't satisfy the soul, but he doesn't address the actual need of ananda, which means relationship. They know that you have to be happy, so they bring ananda down and knowledge down to the platform of sat. So basically chit ananda they finesse by just turning it into different forms of sat. Jaimini, he will address all these things. He understands there's the soul. That's why Jaimini can defeat the other four schools, because they don't so much. Right? Patanjali, he addresses the soul. So they address the soul, but not its actual ultimate need. Means for karma to be eternal means the soul has to be eternal. So only that much then they acknowledge the soul. Other than that, they don't. So, therefore, we can see as they go higher and higher. So, Uttari means the higher. Like that, in one sense. You can also, Purva means the first part of the Veda, means the Samhita, means the verses of the Veda, and the rituals of the Veda. And Uttara means then, therefore, the metaphysics and the philosophy. So, there's Purva and Uttara, means first and after. But also can be means first, meaning lower, and higher, and outer, meaning higher. So it's in other words, if anything works in this world, because it has a trace of an element of actual truth. Truth meaning that which is the Vedic literatures. and in specific the Vedic literatures in connection with the Lord. Otherwise it wouldn't work. But the problem is because it's speculative, therefore it's inconsistent. So it breaks down at some point and someone else has to make up a philosophy to bridge that gap. And in doing so, because it's still speculative, then they leave a hole somewhere else. And someone else sees that hole and not this hole and tries to fill this one, and then they put their philosophy together. But the Vedic is airtight. You know, it's no holes anywhere. So if one starts from those principles, then one will always be successful. So if one's very intellectual, one can go so into so much detail. One's not very intellectual, one doesn't. But because the principle is there. So they're able to apply it, and you have a common platform for all classes of devotees. Does that make sense? So the approach is a little bit different. You get them to think about what it is that they're supposed to learn, rather than necessarily try to find it without giving them an answer. You can bring up questions, you can have them try to search, but they should know what they're looking for. You know. Does that make sense?
I was asking it because we use some modern pedagogy, but I can see that the devotees that designed this kept in mind, you know, amalgamating it in a proper way with Vedic pedagogy.
You can use the method if it's because those who have come out of the modern educational systems will be more acquainted with that, so they can relate to it very easily. You know, you tell them, okay, we're going to have a bit of a lecture, then we're going to give you some homework. They won't say why, because they've been doing it for the last 12, 20 years. And the methods of having it, how you sit around, the interactions, you know, the kind of like this, you know, the modern kind of workshop interaction. They're used to it, so it works very well for them. So immediately then they'll get what you're trying to teach. But one has to be careful to see that it's based on the tradition, because otherwise it will have a shortcoming there. Like that. You know, it's just like the principle of everybody, one shouldn't work on one's position. But in that statement, it's correct that if you want to have a free interaction, no one should feel that they can't speak because their senior person's there, or, you know, so they're shy to speak, or that if they do speak, the senior person will then, you know, squash what they're saying or throw it out the window. But that's actually an impersonal statement because it's only one side of a relationship. You have one hand trying to clap. The other side is that all etiquettes according to position must be followed by all devotees. So the devotees themselves must follow the etiquette, but at the same time as no one should take any stance in the class because they're all students based on that. You know, it's just like you take the training of an acharya, right, in these you know, Vedic sampradayas, the Madhvas, the Shris, the Ramanujis, and that. So they have a kid, especially the Shankarites and the Madhvas. Shris not so much. They generally take sannyas when they're really old. But the Madhvas and the Shankarites might take sannyas, you know, anywhere from 6 on up. So here you have a kid who doesn't know anything, but he's the acharya. And he has to be trained. So they bring 20 of the best Brahmins in their sampradaya to train this acharya. So they are the teachers. So therefore the mood of the student to inquire from the teacher has to be there. But at the same time, he is the acharya. They bow down to him before they start the class. They bow down to him when they finish. And when they talk to him, he's Maharaj. But they are the teacher, so they have to present the subject matter and ask him if he understands, and then say, tell him to pay it. You know, if he doesn't pay attention to this, he won't understand, he won't be able to preach. So they have to deal with him at his age, you know, as a student, but as the Acharya. That's human life. Because the other is too simple, right? It's so simple that it's impersonalism. That the seniors should drop their position, but the juniors can be as animalistic as they like. So it's not human. So it's to address that there was an overemphasis of senior Vaishnavas standing on their position and making many people miserable. So it addresses that very nicely. But then it's going on the principle that everybody is so well trained that they would follow etiquettes. But if they're so well trained, how did you get someone to behave in a way who's senior, who didn't? Means in these areas they weren't trained. And they're the ones who are heading the thing, so that means the ones under are also not trained. So it has to be complete. So the idea that you want to create a free thinking thing, that's good, because that is the meaning. Someone who inquires, someone who is introspective. That is education. If they're not introspective, they don't inquire, they don't have the desire to know, how can there be education? It won't be. So the Vedic ideal is very much sought after by the modern school of education. But in the meantime, is that idea that should be there, but the culture is somehow or another becomes misplaced. Because there's so much of afraid of exploitation by someone senior. But you can also be exploited by someone junior. Like that. So because that's not what's prominent, therefore you want to solve that problem, then you address that. Then when it goes the other way, then you have to address this, and then you go on. So therefore the Vedic is right from the beginning, just address the whole topic. You just show the middle line, show the both sides, and say everybody where they are and how they fit in. And still, even though everybody's there, still the facilitator is running the class. Right? The facilitator is the teacher, must be respected, and must guide where it's going. It means they can be called a facilitator, it sounds nice, but the point is they are the teacher. Facilitator gets across the idea you're trying to facilitate bringing out the knowledge, that conversation, that workshop mood. So it becomes a nicer, it gives the right connotation as opposed to teacher. Because teacher, then you think you're going to sit there and they're going to tell you what's going on, because that's what people are used to. The teacher just tells you what you're supposed to do rather than gets you to respond and understand. So facilitator gives a better understanding of that. But it's the same thing. So the etiquette still remains, is that whoever is student in the class must respect who is speaking. At the same time, as the speaker must respect the others in the class as students and according to their position. If they're senior to them or equal to them or junior to them. And the students in the class must also. So then it becomes very nice and it works and it can go on forever and never have to be again readjusted and again, you know, all the points before you start the class have to be rewritten and adjusted. So that's the, in using the modern, one has to take it back to that. That's what Krishna's meaning in the Chatur-shloki. Up to this, it must be understood. Means you find a technique, it looks good, it works, but if the technique is not taken all the way up to Krishna, then it will fail at some point or another, or in some way or another. That's the principle. So anything can be engaged in Krishna's service, but it's just a matter of seeing it in the full picture. Because when you take it up to Krishna, then everything expands also sideways. So when you take it to Krishna, that creates broad-mindedness. Like that. So that combination that makes it very good. So in doing that, then it just has to be thought like that. Then it doesn't matter. You know, because that will be, you don't have to retrain them how to think to be able to get benefit from the beginning. Well, if you want to get full benefit out of the Vedic, you basically have to retrain how they think. So basically Prabhupada's done that by his purports in that. But and that works in, you know, the lecture and all that, but if you want to have a classroom situation, then whether one gets it from Vedic techniques or modern techniques, if they work, then they work. But you just have to see that the technique doesn't miss something in the culture of philosophy like that. Because otherwise, at some point, it'll give you trouble. Maybe not today, but maybe after a few years, it'll create some problem. Does that make any sense? So it's like that. It's like that. Then it works. Is that okay? Anything else, or we'll finish it? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jayate Gaura Prenami.
You know that Giriraj Swami and Dhanadhar Swami, in fact, Chaitanya Maharaj.